Hi, and welcome to Walk On Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Kibler. Thanks so much for downloading, listening. If you are on the off chance, not a friend or a family member of mine, and you're listening to this, thanks for the trust. And I know your time is valuable and you have many podcasts to listen to. There is never enough podcasts out there. But a little bit about me and why I'm doing this. First off, I want to thank UCB for taking the opportunity, for giving me this opportunity and taking a chance on me. My story is I produced a documentary on my life called Walk On, which is the basis of the podcast. That followed my story from being born HIV positive and disabled. I was told I was never going to live past 4 and I was never going to walk. And about 5 years ago, I started the documentary where I trained to walk 6.2 miles in the LA AIDS walk. That film gave me the platform to share my story and connect with others, and I want to do the same for you guys. And I want to share stories from others who are disabled, who have overcome their obstacles, whether it's in entertainment, working in sports, working in healthcare, government. I'm super excited to have people on here who can just share what they've gone through, and I hope you enjoy what we do here. My first guest is going to be Katie Sullivan, who is an actress, an athlete who is a double above-the-knee amputee. We're going to share her story. She's also on the documentary Walk On, and I'm just so excited for you guys to hear it. So without further ado, here's the interview, and thanks so much.
I took a little bit of time to actually go on vacation.
That's good.
Which was really kind of needed. I've never been to the Hamptons, and my cousin has a house there, and she was like, it's empty, and you should go there. And I was like, you had me at empty. So I went and hung out at my cousin's house for a week. And
I haven't been to the Hamptons, which is like, I haven't been to the Hamptons, but
yes,
if you haven't
been to the Hamptons, you really must go.
I had only gone like once or twice when I was doing a disabled camp, and they have a nice camp out there, Southampton Fresh Air Home, and it's like an all disabled camp. And I used to go when I was a kid, when I was living in New York.
How cool is that?
Yeah. So I was like, oh, that is far from like the Hamptons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was like, okay, we're in the woods.
This is where they allow the disabled children
exactly.
to play off
exactly.
in a far corner of the Hamptons, not near any of the fancy no. people.
In a restricted, accessible area.
Yeah. Please stay within your pen and play nicely with others. That's
yes.
awesome, though.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun back then.
I went to a handicap camp. I mean, whatever, disabled yeah. camp.
Okay, what is your term? Because I don't care. I really don't care.
I don't either. And we've had I just got done doing a play in Manhattan at Manhattan Theater Club called Cost of Living, and there were there's 4 actors in the show, but 2 of us were disabled, and there was a lot of conversation of like vocabulary and what terms do we use and how is it, I feel like people are so, they err on like too PC.
Right.
And then they're afraid to say anything. And I mean, I don't love the word handicap. I don't know. I mean, it just seems a little old, antiquated. Disabled doesn't bother me. I mean, to me, I just prefer people having the damn conversations to begin with instead of being afraid to, like, speak up about it.
And, like, because I don't care about disabled. I always lean on the side of inappropriate because that's just
sure.
me.
Yeah.
And I get all my friends in trouble because then they think that's okay to talk to every single person
like
that.
I was hanging out with my cripple friend and they're like, whoa, you can't say that.
But it's like, I also get irritated by the, like, oh, you're not disabled, you're able. Like, it's like...
Differently abled.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it doesn't, like, no, there is a physical impairment. There's a struggle. That's fine. It's, like, you don't have to come up with a fluff word for it.
Yeah.
Like, there is a difference. We have a difference. We have something to overcome. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And let's just be cool with that.
I've started to use, especially when I'm just kind of... speaking about myself or speaking about a situation, I tend to say things like physical circumstance, stuff like that. Because I'm
fancy.
Yeah,
I like that.
I mean, so I'm very educated, and I know big words. But to me, that's sort of like, it's, you know, whatever that means to you. Everybody's got a different physical circumstance.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like, because it is. It's true. Every single person has, because I believe everyone has a internal and external disability and some like something that keeps them back. And a lot of times it's not visually present. And so we just, you know, our impairments or our obstacles are just a lot easier to see.
Right.
Often. And we all have other things. We all have baggage. So whatever.
Yeah.
But so let's, I want to get back to cost of living.
Yes.
So you just finished Manhattan Theater Club.
Right.
How long was the run?
I was in New York for almost 4 months. So I was that, and that included rehearsal and stuff like that. So, it was, it's a play about, two couples, you know, two sets of people. And, one person in each one is a caregiver, and then the other person is somebody who needs care. And it's those two stories sort of dancing around each other. You don't really know how they're related or connected in any way until the very end.
Okay.
And my side of things, it's kind of also the spectrum of it deals with the kind of haves and the have-nots. The other end of things is a guy named John, who is played by a friend of mine, actor named Greg Mazgala, and he has cerebral palsy and needs a caregiver. And but he comes from money, from wealth.
Okay.
And then our end of the spectrum is sort of like trying to make ends meet. And how does that, you know, the difference between somebody's like, I can make decisions based on financial, what I want, instead of, I actually need this. I actually really need for somebody to, my character had a spinal cord injury. And so she needed care, you know, basically 24 hours a day.
So now I just want, like, obviously your disability is not a spinal cord injury. So how was it for you to portray, like, because that's always the thing that comes up with disabled actors, especially, like, you know, even when we go for roles, it's you're playing disabled. It's just the overall, but the disability, they're so different, and they're so, they relate to everyone so personally in that way. So, like, for the process for you, how was it kind of?
I wasn't really certain that they were even going to really consider me for the role, to be honest, because I'm a double amputee. I was born, you know, without my legs, and it's kind of all I have ever known. And this character was written to have a spinal cord injury. And I was just like, they seemed to want such authentic physical circumstances. but at the end of the day, they wanted to be true to having somebody portray this character that had a disability, but they wanted to also get the best actor that they could.
Right.
So I think they kind of, I won out because I think of my skill as an actor, but then we had to have conversations about, okay, what exactly happened to her in this car accident? And my pitch to them was, I think she lost her legs too.
Yeah.
So and then it was like, and if that is the case, she wouldn't be sitting in a wheelchair wearing prosthetic legs. It just doesn't make any sense. She'd be worried about pressure sores. And it just, especially at the point where we meet her, she's not concerned about the appearance of, you know, she's kind of had her whole life crumble, you know, smashed in front of her.
Which is, I mean, I think that's an important topic to discuss in terms of, like, sometimes story trumps the specifics, in the sense of, like, getting caught in the specifics, getting worried about the specifics. And the fact that, you know, you are a disabled actor in the role is great enough in itself that sometimes I feel like we get boggled down by, like, it being the right thing. And not to say that we should always cast with the right thing in mind, but talent. And I mean, you're definitely coming from a place of truth.
Yeah.
So that should also Trump, and I don't even want to say that word.
Yeah,
but
it's funny. That's actually that word was in cost of living, and I said it like in this one section. I said it like three times, and she cut two of them because she was like, "We're just gonna gloss over it."
Yeah,
and like hopefully because it was, you know, I punched it a lot more earlier on and things like that. And everybody was just like, it's like Voldemort. Like, nobody wants to say his name.
the overall thing is it matters more.
Yes.
That your performance and just the story can live on. You can have a full story without getting boggled down and being like, well, why is that? That doesn't make sense. Or why wouldn't, you know, you can, there's a more emotional reach.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's twofold. It was interesting that there were a lot of people, it's so fascinating. The world that we live in, what people are used to seeing in terms of what, you know, mm-hmm. disability and things like that. In talkbacks and things, there was this one woman in a talkback one day that said, when I wheeled out on stage in my wheelchair and I had, you know, I was sitting there. Now, part of it was that I was playing a quadriplegic with a very high injury. So the only movement that I had was in shoulders and one of my arms. The other arm was totally stationary, right, which is a really hard thing to do for somebody who has movement. And I'm very animated.
I mean, you're so. Like me. I mean, I'm Italian, so I talk with my hands regardless. But you are very visually.
I had to do a lot of deep breathing and like a lot of, you know. And there were days, obviously, that your like nose would itch on stage, and you'd just be like, I'm just fucked. There's nothing I can.
That's when you use it. That's when you use that.
Yeah, use it. Oh God. Anyway, but this woman said to me in this talkback, she was like, I kept trying to figure out the trick, like, because I wasn't moving. So it almost, people were like, is it a trick wheelchair? Is her bot, like, is it a dummy, like half of this thing? And she's somewhere, the rest of her is inside this wheelchair. When she was like, I was looking for the trick camera. And I'm like, I'm 15 feet away from you. Yeah. And you, I don't understand. People are so used to like CGI or
like,
things
no, I'm
being.
I'm a good actor.
Yeah, I'm just, capable of. I just was born without my legs, and people just aren't. They don't have. They've never seen it.
It's very black and white. It's like if you're in a wheelchair, you're disabled, or if you're not in a wheelchair, you're not disabled.
Yeah,
and they don't. There's no understanding of like anything other than that. It's simple as it's.
It's fascinating.
Oh yeah, well, even walking down the street, which I'm sure you've. Get your plenty of interesting comments.
Yeah.
Like, I get a completely different reaction if I'm in my wheelchair as opposed to if I'm walking with my cane.
Totally.
Do you find, like, with that, in terms of probably, like, the way maybe you're dressed, if it's more visible or not, do you find that there's a difference? Or?
Totally. I mean, I feel like if I have on a pair of jeans and, like, regular shoes or whatever, people will, like, come up to me in the grocery store or whatever and just be like, oh, did you hurt your foot? And be like, it's just been a really long day. Like, I mean, you know, it's not my obligation to be the ambassador for all people with disabilities at all times. But no, when people see me often, I mean, I'm very open about my body, and I mean, I'm not a stripper or anything, but like, I'm very like open about the fact that like, this is who I am, and this is what my body looks like. And I wear skirts and I wear shorts and things like that. And people can see my prosthetic legs. But I get asked all the time if people should be thanking me for my military service.
Because
I'm a young person who is an amputee. So clearly I was in Afghanistan.
Oh, of course. I mean, I work out my upper body and I have muscles. So then, of course, I was a military. I went to a war, like a convent, like a function for a friend of mine to support him.
Yeah.
And we were standing together and he got completely like ignored, and they thanked me for my service, and I felt so horrible.
Oh my God.
It's the weirdest things happen sometimes with people, and
Where, I just think, but people like, Greg always talks about the fact that having my friend who was in cost of living with me talks about all the time that sort of like, you know, the idea of like, obviously all the world is a stage, whatever. But for people with disabilities, we're always on stage. We're always on display. People are always looking at us, either, you know, side eye trying to figure out what's going on or looking at us differently, or children are coming up and asking us questions, or, you know, being their, you know, parents are like putting their hands over their mouths so they'll stop going, what happened to that person? You know, you can't really escape it.
Well, no. And I think there's also some times where I find I even will project it when it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 'cause it happens so often that I go into circumstances and I find myself being like so much more like, I want to make excuses, or if I trip a little, I always want to be the one to make the joke first of like, I'm going to throw out the disabled joke so that everyone's comfortable when it's not even the thought, but it's hard not to.
Yeah. I mean, I think that those are pretty deep seated coping mechanisms that we have put. I mean, you and I are both, I think we tend to use humor a lot to sort of deflect, but also cope with shit we can't do anything about our circumstances that we've been handed. Both of us, it was birth. It was something that was just given to us and just sort of like, here you go, day one. Congratulations, you're gonna have it's gonna be a struggle. Welcome to the earth. But
well, and let's talk a little about that. Yeah. Like, I want to go into that because we haven't really talked much in terms of like growing up with it, because there is a divide. That's funny because like I did my research, I have my notes, I have my little bullet points of things I wanted to talk about, and it's just been going so well. So it's been going right into this. But this is what I want to talk about, is there's a definite divide between having an accident or becoming disabled and being born disabled. There's a different, like, in terms of perspective, emotional stakes, just complete outlook.
Yeah.
So for you, what was it like growing up with a disability from?
I mean, I think for the most part, I spent a lot of my childhood, young adulthood, sort of what I called practicing the art of blending in. I mean, I really just wanted to, I mean, I wore cosmetic covers. I didn't own a pair of shorts or, you know, a dress that was above my knee or, you know, anything like that. And because I wanted people to notice me because I'm, you know, intelligent and witty and stunningly gorgeous. And like, not because, you know, I have metal sticks for legs, which, you know, it's pretty badass. But there are times when you just want, you know, for people to see the human, you know, first. And I think that's, to me, growing up this way, I did practice the art of blending in for a really long time. And it was kind of running. It was me getting into this space of being, you know, starting to be a competitive runner, which is sort of a really random chapter in my life in general. But
and we're definitely going to get into that stuff as well.
No, sure. But like, I had to get to a deeper place of self-acceptance at that point, where I was just like, I can't hide behind these carbon fiber running feet that don't look anything like a normal leg. I can't put pants over them and have them kind of go away.
Right.
So, but I think growing up this way, I realized early on that if I was going to do the things that I wanted to do, I was going to have to work 10 times harder than an able-bodied kid or person or whatever. If I was going to be doing the things that I wanted to be doing, and I do not have small dreams.
Right.
You've picked big ass dreams.
The toughest things in the world to excel at, you've decided as your career.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I should go have my head checked. Maybe I have more disability than I think. But
you're touching it. You have, because I always said that too. It's like you have to fight so hard to reach to neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You have to fight so hard just to get to where everyone else gets to start
to zero.
To zero.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's you. But I think that that's the drive, and not to get overly corny and inspirational, but that's the drive that makes you not only reach neutral, but excel beyond that to where other people don't even realize they could go.
Yeah.
And you end up as like the first one in the room, the first one there at production, or the first one at training.
Yeah.
Because you have to.
Yeah.
For yourself.
Right.
Not even just for other people.
I mean, they're early on sort of in my auditioning career, and I obviously, you know, I think theater is sort of where we all start as actors, you know, growing up and whatever. But for me, it was I would always have to go and do like extra research. Like, are there stairs walking up to this stage if I'm going to go and do an audition and I'm going to do they want me to do a monologue and a song? Like, what does the room look like?
Right.
What am I walking into so that I don't put myself so that I'm not feeling insecure just because of walking into the room.
Right.
Before I actually even open my mouth to do what I need to do as a performer.
And it's surprising, too, even when it's a disabled-focused role, how many rooms aren't accessible.
Yeah.
And they don't even, it's not even a thought.
Yeah. It's not even the awareness of, oh, maybe a wheelchair can't fit into this tiny room. Or maybe somebody who, you know, has trouble with, oh, okay, so let's put this up a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great plan. People just aren't aware. We're sort of this invisible group of people in a lot of ways.
Well, and even in the discussion, I'm on all like forums. I never post on forums, but I will view every forum on diversity and read. And it's so interesting to me to see a lot of people who are very positively forward about diversity and unrepresented groups. And even in their post of like, we need, you know, gender equality, we need, sexual orientation, we need. And more often than not, disability is still even left off on those lists.
And individuals with disabilities are the largest minority in our country, in our world.
Right.
It's almost 20% of the population lives their life with some sort of disability, and we are the least represented in our entertainment and in the media. And I'm not, and part of it sounds like a little bit like, you know, oh, boo, there's, you know, it's so hard to be a performer. It's like, no, but it's the trickle down effect of how people see the world around them.
Right.
And then ultimately how people, you know, someone in Nebraska is going to be, no, not that there's anything wrong with Nebraska. It was just this first state
we're not against Nebraska on the podcast.
Thank you. Great. We love Nebraska. But my point is, if some random person walking down the street in middle, you know, somewhere in the middle, see somebody in a wheelchair, and then they feel comfortable to just say hello to them because they've seen it. It normalizes it. It brings something that people are afraid of into their living rooms. That's where we're sort of, I feel like we're at a pretty cool tipping point.
We definitely are. And it's not even just about getting disabled roles on TV and getting, but not just being about disabled stories. And I think that's the huge push that we're leaning towards finally.
Right.
Is like having roles that just a disabled person can play, and it doesn't have to be like, I was in a car accident and now I'm trying to become a doctor because I had to work on my, like, it doesn't have to be this intricate thing. People with disabilities have daily functioning lives with different jobs.
Yeah.
And
tell me more about this.
I know, right? Yeah. Okay. This is a secret. We've kept this under wraps, but
people with disabilities that have jobs. Lawyers and doctors and you know,
mechanics,
professors.
Oh my.
And it's interesting too. It's starting to see those things where it's exactly what you said. It's not like, oh, we're gonna write a, it's a very special episode of NCIS or whatever it is, where you know, they go and have a conversation with that veteran that, you know, I'm actually speaking from my own personal experience, but just saying like, okay, why can't this person who is, a double amputee or somebody who walks with a cane or whatever, why can't that person also be a lawyer?
Right. Or even just like the cashier who has two line, like I've been excited over two line co-star roles that have nothing to do with the disability over ones that are like, this entire episode is going to be about how you were, we'll pull into other things, you know, like a crime hacker who's in disability who drives cars with like a computer because you're disabled and you have to do it that way.
Stop talking about yourself.
I'm just
just kidding.
You got your Warvette and I got my...
You're a hacker.
A hacker and bad guys and good guys and...
I think it's interesting. Here's the debate and maybe get your perspective on this. I got called in for a play while I was in New York to read for a totally different play.
Right.
It was an able-bodied role. She had nothing to do with the fact that she is not written to have a disability. She's a lawyer. It was an incredible part. I was so excited. I was just excited to be called. I mean, obviously called in to read for another off-Broadway play, and that people thought I had done good work, so they brought me in to something else, and that's amazing. But I went into the room with a skirt on, and just sort of being open about, you know, who I am and what this looks like and whatever. And I'm really proud of the audition. Like, I know I did a good job. It was 9 pages. It was a lot of dialogue. It was a lot of legalese. And theater's not like TV. They gave me like almost a week to work on it before I had to go in, 5 days or whatever. And I didn't ultimately get cast, and I didn't even get a callback. And I know I killed that audition.
Right.
And so then I go back and I'm starting to like second guess or question, should I have worn pants? Should I have gone in and presented myself in such a way where it was like, I can look able-bodied.
So thinking like they just couldn't see past the idea of like, oh.
What statement would we be making if this lawyer had lost both of her legs?
Right. I mean... In my opinion, obviously they had to have known about you and they know that situation. So it's like, because I did the same, I would do the same thing. It's like hide or like try to be what they want as opposed to what you are.
And I guess it would be different if this were people that had not seen me and didn't know anything about me.
But if they see you, they should have that understanding of that's what's coming in the room, you would think. But there's a lot of times where that doesn't happen and they overthink it. And I think they worry. They put it on the people. They put it on the audiences. The audiences are not going to get it.
Yeah.
Or they're going to have questions. And it's like, no, it's just if anything, I feel like what we bring to the table is depth. Like you create a backstory without saying one word in exposition by just being.
Yeah.
And so, I think that's probably what they felt or they were worried about. But if you kill, I mean... Talent overcomes anything. And
here's what I kind of have to just sort of. I know I did well. So at least a director who I had not met before has seen me work, and the casting director, she had seen me before, and she saw cost of living, and she brought me in because of that. And so obviously you don't get every role that you audition for, but. We're in this conundrum of like this space, this like really complicated space of like, do we expose this or do we not? How much do we tip our hand? How much do we try to? It's this huge balance, and I agree with you. I think it can color a character. Add shading to a character without, again, like you said, without even opening your mouth, this person's already lived a life the second they walk on stage.
And everyone can see that and they can fill in whatever blanks they want, which I think is the goal.
Yeah.
It's like to have that represented. I think also just where we are now, it's like I'm always, there's the argument of like disabled act or roles getting to able-bodied actors. And I'm very different in the sense of, like, I'm okay with that idea as long as we're all getting to play. If we're all getting to go in for every role and it's only talent.
But it's a legitimate opportunity.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of times people are brought in as an after fact.
Yes.
Or brought in as a, well, we kind of have to. And then, so we'll bring all these people in and then, but we'll just cast that able guy and we'll sit him down in a wheelchair because that's the plan. That was the plan
that was
from
the plan
beginning.
From the, yeah. And there's a definite
difference. That's a difference.
That's a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely times where it's like, okay, this is all part of a negotiation as opposed to...
It's a facade.
A facade, yeah.
It's a show of yeah. Like, no, we did our due diligence to, like, see people. And it's like, well, no, because that person was already cast.
Right.
Like, you guys called in all the wheelchair guys after the fact.
Yes.
I'm not talking about any particular show on television currently right now.
No, not at all. Not at all. But even going into that, I mean, you've had your time on TV and in theater. I mean, because I didn't know you have a wiki, by the way. You have a Wikipedia.
I do. And I'm on Wikipedia.
I was like, that's so weird. A friend of mine's on Wikipedia.
You know what's funny is that when I didn't know I was on Wikipedia for a really long time, and then I looked at my Wikipedia page and it was so wrong that it was like hilarious. Like apparently I broke a world record at age 9 and I didn't start running until I was 25.
Okay, let me cross that one off my notes.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Sorry.
Like, congratulations on your world record when you were 9 years old. And like things like if you did the math, it was like I got married as a teenager and stuff like that. It was just like, I don't really understand. Like, so wrong.
I love that. I love it, though. I love that. It's like, who does that? And I was like, I wanted to Google, you know, because I'm like, I know you. But
yeah.
I want to know some, maybe there's a few things I don't know.
Yeah.
And clearly things like you were married as a teenager.
Yes. I was a child bride.
You were a child bride. I was unaware of.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, though. But then the funny thing was, is I at one point went in because you can edit Wikipedia. and I tried to go in and like edit a bunch of stuff and they put it back because they said that it was sourced from an article. And like they were like, well, this is what, and I'm like, but it's about me. I'm the human that this is about.
Well, and you know, articles are never wrong. Nothing's ever wrong with an article.
I'm not saying anything bad about journalists, but
no.
I'm actually like pleasantly surprised when an article comes out and I'm like, wow, they actually got 95% of this right.
What was it? Even when we were, to go into this a little more, you and I met because we were doing my documentary, Walk On, which is the basis of the podcast.
Yeah.
And during that festival run, we had so many articles done and it was always hilarious because they would get the facts right, separate from the human beings they're attached to.
Right.
And they would, because it was me, you, Jay, it was all the people in the film.
Yeah.
And they would just mix up our disabilities and our, like, backstories with one another. So at one point, I was a quadriplegic who was walking 6.2 miles in the LA AIDS walk, and you were a stand-up comedian.
Uh-huh.
It's so funny how things just get lost in translation.
Yeah.
But
I don't know that people even know, like, people have called me a paraplegic, and I'm just like, I just feel like people toss around words that they don't even really understand.
And that's getting to the bigger discussion of, like, having
education.
And also even just having it on TV, having those specific disabilities talked about in a very real way and a very accurate way.
And digestible.
Yes.
To the average person who hasn't been in and out of doctor's offices their entire life.
Right. So getting into TV, getting into the theater stuff, you've done a few different things. You've done Legit, My Name is Earl, Last Man Standing, NCIS New Orleans, and then obviously Cost of Living with the Manhattan Theater Club, which before that it was at a different theater in Massachusetts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was in Williamstown Theater Festival.
So like all the things you've done, and you also got to work with Philip Seymour Hoffman, which I didn't actually realize.
Yeah.
I didn't know. That was the research. Yeah. That was one of the few, like, I was like, oh, wow, okay, I want to talk about this.
Yeah.
But of all the stuff you've done, where do you feel you've felt most comfortable and just, not just from a disability standpoint, from an actor standpoint? Like, what have you liked the most? TV, theater?
I love TV. I love the pace of it. I love that you get to kind of work on something and then let it go.
Right.
I think theater is a totally different challenge. Theater to me is more about stamina and the ability to get on the roller coaster and go on the ride 8 or 9 times a week.
For like 4 months.
For months and months at a time. It's exhausting, and it's emotionally draining too. So theater is its own monster, and a beautiful challenge and an awesome monster. I think it's important to, you know, it's interesting to work, to be doing both, and working with actors who do, you know, doing theater that have done a lot of TV, and even just looking at like how difficult it is to memorize lines.
Right.
Like, you have to memorize lines in theater in a way that you don't in TV. TV, it's very quick. It's very, it's not often super challenging kind of dialogue.
And
that
it's loose, you know, because it changes.
Exactly. You get new pages first thing in the morning when you're in hair and makeup. And on set, the director could be like, let's change this joke. Let's change it to this. Try this. Say cucumber instead of, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's clearly a different vegetable and fruit. So I really enjoy working in TV. But I love it all. I mean, having the opportunity to just be working as a performer.
Right.
In general, is not something that many people can say that they're currently doing. Yeah. So,
and what would you say like your goals for future? I always love actor goals in terms of, just because everyone has a very specific idea of like where you want to be as opposed to where you get slotted.
Right.
As opposed to like what roles you get to what you would want. Like, what would your ideal future acting role be?
It's interesting. I was sort of asking myself that same question. It was interesting that you brought up Philip Seymour Hoffman. I was sort of lamenting to him about how difficult it is to be a performer with a disability and how frustrating and things like that. And like, struggle is real. and his sort of advice was really like, you know, you could sit around for the next 20 years waiting for somebody to think of this. To think of you for like, oh, I have an idea. Why doesn't that lawyer be? Why don't we make her an amputee?
Right.
So, and then on top of that, you might not be the person they bring into the room. So, with a friend of mine named Becca Flynn, we've started a production company, and it was sort of, you know, and you've worked on some of our projects, but it started out as like, why are we sitting on our hands and waiting for someone to give us permission to be creative? And so we started to just, it started out as like sketches and like funny little things like, isn't this funny? The sketch that we included you in is actually been our most watched.
I'll take
piece.
Full credit on
Please
that one. I'll
do.
Take full credit.
No, it was the whole idea. I mean, it was a disabled zombie PSA, and the
real funny.
The real. Thank you. The thought process behind it was like, I would be a really fucking terrible zombie because I'm on 2 prosthetic legs and they're battery powered. So as soon as these batteries die, like, I am a useless zombie. So we just kind of expanded upon that. And it's been our most viewed
look at that.
Project.
Yeah.
It's really funny. I mean, it's looking at disability. To me, it's not just, obviously, not just disability that we're working on, but like, that's my life perspective. That's how I see the world. So it is included to time.
Yeah. You can't help but do. I mean, if you're especially writing what you know, that whole
right,
it's going to be it's going to be in it. It's going to be in it peppered in different ways.
Yeah.
But you're going to have that.
So Becca and I mean, to answer your original question, we started a production company and we are working on projects that inspire us and projects that, you know, stories we want to tell. And I think end of the day, I would, you know, for me, it's being able to play a character that lives their life through this lens, but is not inspiring, precious, tragic. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you're just a disabled person that's going to the grocery store to get milk.
Yeah, not everything's...
It's Seinfeld. It's not necessarily, you know, stolen valor. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? It's not always this, like, tragic or inspiring thing. And I think getting to that place, playing characters like that, the character I played in Cost of Living was a fully fleshed out three-dimensional person with flaws and had her heart broken.
Like every human being.
And was, a cat, you know, in the corner, scratching at people because she'd been so hurt as a human. And it wasn't necessarily about the fact that, like, oh, she's... to say that's part, it was part of it.
Right. There's always going to be a part of that, but there's humans are beyond that. We all have relationships and struggles and things that have nothing to do with the disability itself. So there is that important thing, but you can't help but also talk about it.
Right.
Now here's something I want to talk about because we get on the subject of like inspirational things and dealing with it. Now, I know as a male disabled career performer, there's a very different world than a female disabled performer in terms of, I've heard this term and maybe you can expand upon it, the devotee
world.
And just the fascination of it. I mean, I want to get it because these are things that people don't know about. I didn't even, as a disabled person, I didn't know about this until I met more female disabled people who are like, oh, this thing occurs and there's this fascination with women with disabilities.
So for the people out there listening, there is a fetish that is all completely devoted to sexualizing women and men, but that have disabilities. And it's really an interesting world that I've kind of, you know, like I've kind of, you just sort of accept that that's part of it.
Right.
But it's sort of the hypersexualizing of somebody and like focusing on the disability. Like, and they're called devotees. And it's like, you know, women in wheelchairs or women who are amputees and things like that. And I'm incredibly careful about the images that I post and the things that I put out there because I want to be seen and portrayed in a certain way. And I've had people ask me if they could have images of me with my prosthetics off and things like that. And I'm like, I post what I'm comfortable sharing.
Right.
And sorry, you know, like I'm not going to do...
Well, you're not going to just do like a photo shoot for a random...
lingerie shoot for some guy who wants to see me without my prosthetics on. Like super weird and... But, you know, I mean, I guess people are into all sorts of fucked up shit. I don't know.
I guess, yeah, in the comfort of your own home, but bringing it out to other people and things like that. I just find it such a like a weird but interesting level of like, you know, you go from just this idea of like feeling so secluded and then there's the specific group of people who are so into that idea is just a mind-boggling thing. And it's one thing that gives me a headache every day. And I hear it from a lot of my disabled female friends, especially on like dating and all this other stuff that there's this underlining thing. But it's just... I
also find it interesting sort of the difference of being a woman with a disability and being a man with a disability that are performers or whatever. The roles that are written, like, for example, I was on Legit, which was a show on FX that I play. Actually, I would say that character on that show was the closest character I've ever come to actually being somebody that I recognize of like, this is the closest to me that I've ever, she was just a, you know, kind of normal girl and they were online dating and all of that stuff. And she just didn't disclose her disability up until the very end. And neither did Billy, DJ Qualls, who was playing that role, who was an able-bodied guy playing a disabled character. That even that show, legit, the pilot was, we're going to get Billy laid. Like, Billy is, you know, was disabled and needed 24-hour-a-day care, was paralyzed basically from the neck down. And they were like, we need to get him laid. Like,
that was the premise of the pilot.
And I haven't seen a show where women with a disability have been treated as sexual beings in any real way.
Because now you say that, I can think of like several films where it's all about like, let's get our good buddy who's quadriplegic or disabled. Yeah. Like, let's get him a girl. And
let's go to a strip club.
Like that conversation. And it's not, you're right. It's not.
There's something about, there's this line that we haven't crossed yet that is part of, you know, what Becca and I are working on and what we're kind of going after is, you know, women who live their life with a disability, they're three-dimensional people too, and that's part of it. But for some reason, it's easier to kind of look at men and that sort of funny way of just being like, oh, let's go, you know, let's go.
Well, yeah, it's also the Jane Lynch effect, the thing of like when Jane Lynch was going up and her manager would put her up for things that were male-oriented, because the writing is always different, especially with like a woman in power over a man in power, and this idea that there should be any difference, which there shouldn't, and the writing quality should be just as good, if not like, because you're just writing characters, but it's never that way.
Yeah.
And it is pushing the boundaries and pushing boundaries for things that shouldn't even have a boundary on them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is insane in itself.
Yeah. So one of the things that we're doing is pushing the edges of those boundaries, and we got some cool stuff going on, so it's exciting.
Well, I'm glad. Well, I'm also glad you could come on today. And
we
touched the surface. Yeah. We're definitely going to have you on again.
I would love to.
Kind of go into more detail of other things. But for people who are listening who want to keep up with what you're doing and the new shows, which I know you have a lot coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where can they reach you?
So I'm on Instagram and Twitter. It's at K Bridget S. I mean, you could just put Katie Sullivan, K-A-T-Y Sullivan, into those things, and I come up. But I have a fan page on Facebook. And
perfect.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll make sure that all those details too are in.
In the show notes.
I'm sure we'll make sure that that's there.
Perfect.
And just thank you again. Thank you for coming on the pilot.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome. Congratulations on the show.
Well, thank you.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. We'll be right back.